Iran admits war's economic toll, shifts focus to diplomacy. 6 months of war with the United States has compressed Iran's foreign trade by nearly 35%, pushed annual inflation to 66%, and forced Tehran's leadership to publicly acknowledge economic pain that state media has spent months minimizing. President Massoud Pezeshkian told state media that sanctions and a U.S. naval blockade had caused exports and imports to slump by close to 35%. The admission, delivered on August 29, 2026, marks a departure from the posture Tehran maintained through the early months of the conflict that began on February 28, when U.S. and Israeli forces launched strikes that killed Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The government's acknowledgement that inflation hit 66% in the prior month, and that job creation and price stability have become central policy targets, signals a regime under material economic strain rather than one managing a contained disruption. Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Jassim Al Thani traveled to Tehran on Thursday for direct talks, with Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi describing the discussions as creative. The visit confirms that Doha is functioning as an active back channel at the highest level, a role it has played in prior Iran-related diplomatic sequences. The stakes extend well beyond Tehran's budget arithmetic. The Strait of Hormuz, through which approximately 20% of global oil supply transits, remains the central leverage point. Iran has pledged to maintain what it describes as control over the strait, while simultaneously signaling readiness for diplomacy. That combination, confrontation paired with negotiation, defines the structural ambiguity that energy markets, sovereign wealth funds, and logistics operators must now price. The 35% trade collapse, what the number actually means, a 35% contraction in both exports and imports within 6 months, is not a cyclical slowdown. It is a structural dislocation. Iran's pre-war export base was anchored in hydrocarbons. Pezeshkian disclosed that during the June Memorandum of Understanding with Washington, a period when oil sales were briefly permitted, Iran managed to sell approximately 90 million barrels. That figure implies a run rate of roughly 500,000 to 600,000 barrels per day during the MOU window, depending on its precise duration, compared to estimates of Iran's pre-conflict production capacity in the range of 3 to 3.5 million barrels per day. The MOU period was short-lived. Since its collapse, the blockade has resumed. Iran sold approximately 90 million barrels of oil during the brief June MOU window with Washington, according to President Pezeshkian. The MOU has since lapsed. Terms of any future arrangement were not disclosed. The import side of the 35% contraction carries equal weight for institutional analysis. Iran's industrial supply chains, including inputs for petrochemical processing, manufacturing and food distribution, depend on cross-border commerce. A sustained import compression at this magnitude degrades productive capacity over time, making economic recovery slower, even if sanctions are eventually lifted. Annual inflation at 66% compounds the damage. Tehran residents described to Al Jazeera the daily consequences: household incomes insufficient for rent and basic goods, food businesses unable to cover labor costs, individuals re-entering the workforce simply to sustain household consumption. These are not abstractions. They are leading indicators of social cohesion pressure that the new Supreme Leader Ayatollah Mujtaba Khamenei, in a written statement, addressed directly, calling on the government to tackle the chain of economic and livelihood challenges, such as inflation, unemployment, management of prices, and the market for goods and services. The Hormuz variable, shipping, insurance, and the energy premium, the Strait of Hormuz, is not merely a geopolitical symbol. It is a physical choke point with calculable consequences for global commodity flows. Iran's government framed diplomacy and defense as two complementary, coordinated, and inseparable wings in its August 29 statement. Army Commander-in-Chief Amir Hatami told the FARS news agency that Iran's drone and missile stockpile had been fired with the utmost intensity until the last moment, a statement that functions as both a military assessment and a deterrent signal. Acting Defense Minister Majid Ibn Riza separately told the Tasnim news agency that Iran had surprises prepared for its adversaries. For Institutional Capital, the read is this: Tehran is simultaneously exhausted and armed. That combination produces unpredictable escalation risk, which is precisely the kind of tail risk that is difficult to price and therefore tends to be underpriced in liquid markets until it crystallizes. War risk insurance premiums for vessels transiting the Persian Gulf have historically spiked during periods of Iranian military posturing. The current situation, a confirmed blockade with active naval enforcement, is materially different from prior episodes of rhetorical tension. Tanker operators, reinsurance books, and energy-exposed sovereign wealth portfolios in the Gulf Cooperation Council are each carrying exposure that a negotiated Hormuz settlement would significantly reduce. Qatar's diplomatic role is the most significant near-term variable. Doha hosts the U.S. military's largest regional airbase, maintains functional relations with Tehran, and has a direct economic interest in stable regional shipping, given its liquefied natural gas export infrastructure. The Qatar Prime Minister's visit and the designation of the talks as creative by Foreign Minister Araghchi suggests the parties are exploring frameworks rather than exchanging positions. That is progress, but terms were not disclosed. The Gulf Cooperation Council exposure matrix, winners, losers, and the rerouting premium, the conflict has reshuffled capital flows across the Gulf Cooperation Council in ways that create identifiable investment implications. Saudi Arabia and the UAE, which have developed port infrastructure on the Red Sea and alternative pipeline routes, are positioned to capture rerouting revenue from cargo that previously moved through Hormuz-dependent lanes. The broader question for private equity and infrastructure capital is whether this conflict accelerates the build-out of redundant logistics corridors in the region, a thesis that several infrastructure funds were already exploring ahead of the February escalation. Iran's stated intention to reduce dependence on the dollar as part of its economic recovery plan aligns with a broader trend among sanctioned economies toward bilateral trade settlement in non-dollar currencies. The practical capacity of Iran to execute this strategy at scale under current conditions is limited, but the policy signal matters for longer-term assessments of dollar-denominated commodity pricing architecture. Egypt, Jordan, and Turkey each face second-order effects through energy import costs, regional trade disruption, and refugee-linked fiscal pressure. Latin America commodity exporters with exposure to Middle Eastern food import demand, particularly Brazil and Argentina in grains and protein, are monitoring the demand-side consequences of Iran's 66% inflation rate and compressed household purchasing power. The diplomatic architecture, Qatar as clearinghouse, the Qatar-Iran channel, is the only active high-level diplomatic track disclosed in the public record as of August 29, 2026. Doha has served as a diplomatic intermediary in prior Iran-U.S. sequences, including earlier nuclear-related discussions. The current iteration is operating under more acute pressure: a confirmed war, a dead supreme leader, a new supreme leader who has not appeared publicly since the conflict began, and an economy contracting in real time. The new supreme leader's absence from public view introduces a governance uncertainty premium that markets have not yet fully modeled. Khamenei's written statement, read by his associates rather than delivered personally, suggests either security constraints or a deliberate communication strategy. Either interpretation implies that the decision-making architecture inside Tehran is operating under conditions different from those that prevailed before February 28. Foreign Minister Araghchi's characterization of Qatar talks as creative is the closest thing in the public record to a positive diplomatic signal. Institutional investors should monitor whether the Qatar Channel produces a second MOU or a framework for Hormuz passage terms. Either outcome would represent a material repricing event for energy, shipping, and Gulf Cooperation Council exposed equity. The Plaquemium view the market is pricing Iran as a binary. Either the blockade holds and energy disruption continues, or a deal is struck and the risk premium collapses. That framing misses the more likely outcome, a protracted, managed ambiguity in which Iran periodically signals openness to talks while maintaining enough military posture to extract concessions. This is not a new Iranian playbook. It echoes the 2012 to 2015 nuclear negotiation period, during which Tehran sustained sanctions pressure while preserving its core negotiating position. The difference now is that the human cost is steeper, the inflation rate is higher, and the leadership transition following Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's death introduces genuine internal uncertainty. Our thesis: the second-order opportunity is not in Iranian assets, which remain uninvestable for most institutional mandates, but in the infrastructure and logistics plays that a prolonged Hormuz disruption is forcing into existence. Alternative corridor development across Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Oman, LNG rerouting from Qatari producers, and war risk insurance capacity in the Lloyd's market are each beneficiaries of sustained uncertainty. The 90 million barrel MOU oil sale figure is the most important data point in the source material. It demonstrates that Iran retains the capacity to transact when sanctions are briefly lifted, and that Washington retains the capacity to authorize those transactions as a negotiating lever. The existence of a prior MOU is a structural template. The question is not whether a second one is possible. It is what Iran must concede for Washington to activate it again. A second MOU, even a short-term one, would provide a measurable re-rating catalyst for energy infrastructure names with Gulf exposure and would compress the war risk premium embedded in current tanker charter rates. Institutional capital should position for managed ambiguity, not resolution, and build exposure accordingly. Long alternative logistics infrastructure, long war risk underwriting capacity, and cautious on any name whose earnings model assumes normalized Hormuz throughput before a verified diplomatic framework is in place. The bottom line: Iran's public acknowledgement of a 35% trade contraction and 66% annual inflation is not a sign of imminent capitulation. It is a signal that the regime is recalibrating its communication strategy and its negotiating posture simultaneously. The Qatar diplomatic channel is active. A second MOU is the most plausible near-term de-escalation mechanism. Until one materializes, the Hormuz premium remains embedded across energy, shipping, and Gulf Cooperation Council sovereign balance sheets. The investors who benefit are those positioned in the infrastructure corridors being built around the problem, not in resolution of the problem itself.